Hey, folks, what would you do this summer with all the money you'd save if you didn't have a car payment for the next 5 months? Hopefully, buy lots of merchandise for the Mike Church Trading Post. Well, right now at Bulldog Kia in Athens, Georgia, take advantage of the Summer's on Us sales event with zero payments for 5 months. Plus, get 0% financing for up to 66 months on the one-of-a-kind Kia Soul, or the high-tech Kia Forte, or the newly redesigned Kia Optima. Bulldog Kia is where Mrs. Church and I have purchased our vehicle since 2011. They're great friends, and they'll treat you right, too. And for Mike Church Show listeners anywhere in the continental U.S., they will ship your new Kia to you for free. Don't cost nothing. That means your new Kia is only a click or call away. For details, call them at 855-BULLDOG or go to bulldogkia.com. We'll see you at Bulldog Kia.
Welcome to Reconquest on the Crusade Channel of the Veritas Radio Network. This is your host, Brother Andre Marie, coming to you from St. Benedict Center in Richmond, New Hampshire. Our websites are Catholicism.org and Reconquest.net. My email address is bam@Catholicism.org. I'm easily found on Twitter at Brother_Andre and also on Facebook under my name, Brother Andre Marie. And this evening's show is entitled St. Robert Southwell, The Truth, the Beauty, and the Gore. My guest is Mr. Charles Coulombe. I might say my guest for the second segment, but I think I'm going to have him on in the first segment because I'm planning on giving a very sort of truncated introduction to St. Robert Southwell so that we can start discussing him a bit with our guest, Charles, who is not only an historian who can tell us all about the persecution that we're talking about, which gave us this great martyr saint. But he's also a poet in his own right. And he's published at least one book of poetry, The White Cockade, and therefore has a taste for the stuff. And I'll attempt to read one of St. Robert's poems so that we have an appreciation of it, and hopefully I won't botch that too very badly. So let me hop right into St. Robert's life, which is short enough, because he was martyred at the age of 33. I think we know somebody else in history who was martyred at the age of 33. So St. Robert was born in 1561. And he was martyred in 1595. On his mother's side, he was related to the Shelleys, who would later give us, they gave us some judges and some other famous people. But later, these are the same Shelleys whence would come Percy Shelley, the poet, the romantic poet, almost 300 years later. It is also believed that he was related as a cousin, a rather distant cousin, but a cousin who was cognizant of his cousinship with William Shakespeare. This is a theory that a couple of his biographers have mentioned, and apparently some rather compelling genealogical evidence has been marshaled forth in order to prove this. In fact, he wrote introductory comments to one of his longer poems, which is called The Complaint of St. Peter. And in the introduction to said poem, he berates certain modern poets for using their poetical talents essentially to worldly ends and not to glorify God. And some people think that this was sort of a loving jab at his cousin, William Shakespeare. He dedicated the work to his cousin, whom he did not name. So he was related to Shelley and possibly to Shakespeare. He was sent as a young man to study at the English College at Douai. Now, this is in France, English Catholics couldn't really study their Catholic faith in England during the time because this was a time of official persecution. So those who could afford to went to the continent in order to study. So he was educated at the English College of Douay, which is maybe we could do a show on the English College of Douay. It's a story in itself, which is founded by Cardinal William Allen. And there he studied under the Jesuits, who inspired him a great deal. And during his studies there, he flourished in, you know, studying Latin and the classics and what we would call liberal arts. And in fact, began at an early age to write poetry in Latin. His early poetry was all in Latin. It was not in English. He then decides that he wants to become a Jesuit, but he's only 16 years old. So they make him wait till he's almost 18. And they accept him into the Jesuits, and he does a two-year novitiate, and he goes on to study philosophy and theology at the Roman College, which was called the Roman College at the time. It was a Jesuit college. It is now known as the Gregorian, or the Greg, as it's called colloquially, and it is still the Jesuit college in Rome. He was ordained at the tender age of 23, which probably needed a dispensation at that time. I know in the canon law that's in effect since 1917 and then since 1983, 24 is the minimum age for ordination. So he may have needed a dispensation for that. He was ordained in the year 1584. And then he completed some of his Jesuit formation, because the Jesuits have a very long formation. He completed his Jesuit formation over the next couple of years, but he was given a position of responsibility as a young priest, and he was in the English college at Rome, where he was made a provost of studies or something like that. He was given a title, an academic title, basically overseeing the studies of the younger students at that particular Jesuit-run college in Rome. And it was for Englishmen, as the name would suggest. Only 2 years after his ordination and after he's completed this academic charge, he is assigned to go to England. Now, to be in England at the time and to be a Catholic priest who was ordained after a certain point, meaning after the accession of Queen Elizabeth to the throne, you would be killed. You could be killed. It was a capital offense for a priest ordained after Elizabeth took the throne to remain in England for more than 40 days. So his mission to England was basically, it is said that there was a one in three priests who went on such missions would get caught and killed. So there was a one in three chance that he would die a martyr. And he wanted to die a martyr, so this was not a problem for him. He, in fact, had been inspired by the story of the martyrdom of that other Jesuit, Saint Edmund Campion, Campion the Champion, as he's called, who was a Jesuit martyr and is much more well known than Saint Robert is. So his story was actually published and circulated around and inspired young priests to do similar things. Imagine that, reading a story about a martyr and wanting to die a martyr just like he did. So he goes to England and he stays in the house of the Countess of Arundel. Now, the Countess of Arundel was the wife of Philip Howard, Saint Philip Howard, who was the Count of Arundel, who at the time was languishing in the Tower of London. He was, by the way, canonized by Pope Paul VI at the same exact time that Saint Robert Southwell was. And they're both known as that collectivity, the 40 English Martyrs. So he stayed at this house, sort of hidden out behind a wall. The Jesuits were good at designing priest holes and living in walls and not being found. But His mission, which lasted something like 6 years, which had him traveling around and mixing with Catholics whom he would secretly say Mass for and hear their confessions and give them instruction and so forth, he was eventually discovered. But during that time, also something else happened. He was, as I already said, he was a poet. He was well known as a poet. And during that time, he's writing poetry as well as prose works, and they all had religious themes to them. All of them were religious. He wrote nothing that wasn't religious. And the point was he was trying to use an apostolate of the pen in order to get out into Catholics' hands literature that would edify them, that would strengthen them, that would give them the kind of noble sentiments towards Christian virtue that you needed in a time of persecution. And this was something that he excelled at. And under some of the most terrifying circumstances, he produced some of the most exquisitely beautiful poetry and prose, so much so that he made an enormous impact in the literary world of his day. His poetry was published and read, and not just by Catholics, while he was yet alive, and he became tremendously popular after his death and even influenced other poets, again, not all of them Catholic. Shakespeare is thought to have paraphrased from the poem that I'm soon to read, which is a Christmas poem called The Burning Babe. In Macbeth, it's thought that he makes a sort of a tangential reference to that poem, but gives it a much darker connotation. I realize I'm giving short shrift to his biography here, but we only have so much time, and I want to bring in Charles soon. So what I'm going to do is read you about his martyrdom. First of all, he gets caught by this absolute psychopath named Richard Topcliffe, who was a notorious priest hunter. He was an investigator, and he was a torturer. And apparently the man enjoyed being a torturer. The fact is that one of the ways that he discovered where St. Robert Southwell was that he tortured and raped the daughter of a man who was giving some protection to St. Robert. So we're not talking about a very sweet person here. We're talking about a very, very evil, twisted man that even modern-day non-Catholics in England who know the man's history consider him a rather disreputable scoundrel. And so Topcliffe found him and brought him to his own home and tortured him there. It is thought that he underwent something like 9 or 10 separate torture sessions with Topcliffe, and he spent time there and in another prison where Topcliffe had access to him. So much so, this was such a horrible fate that St. Robert Southwell's friends were relieved to discover that he had been moved to solitary confinement in the Tower of London, where at least he could be away for a time from this maniacal torturer, Richard Topcliffe. The reason, by the way, he tortured him wasn't simply because he was a sadistic wretch, which he was, but that's not the only reason he did that. He tortured him because if he could get St. Robert Southwell to not only to confess to his own crimes, that of course of being a priest in violation of the law of the land, but he would also get from him, he hoped, the whereabouts of other Catholics, of secret Catholics, of other priests and so forth. So this was a sort of an intelligence sting operation in order to root out Catholicism completely from the country. And it failed in St. Robert's case because he didn't budge. He didn't confess. He didn't admit to anything except that he was a priest and so forth. But you know, he didn't keep that a secret. But he certainly didn't rat out anyone else. So they got nothing out of him that would lead them to discover anyone else. Now, I want to give a little bit of an assessment of his literary abilities as he's looked at as a poet and as a writer of prose. Before that, I should read you a little bit about his martyrdom, which is pretty brutal. All right, hold on a second. I'm flipping through pages here. All right. On 21st February 1595, Southwell was sent to Tyburn. This is Tyburn Hill. Execution of sentence on a notorious highwayman had been appointed for the same time, but at a different place, perhaps to draw the crowds away, and yet many came to witness Southwell's death. Having been dragged through the streets on a sled, he stood in the cart beneath the gibbet and made the sign of the cross with his pinioned hands before reciting a Bible passage from Romans chapter 14. The sheriff made to interrupt him, but he was allowed to address the people at some length, confessing that he was a Jesuit priest and praying for the salvation of queen and country. As the cart was drawn away, he commended his soul to God with the words of the psalm, In manus tuas Domine commendo spiritu meum. In thy hands, O Lord, I commend my spirit. It's what we sing in the office of Compline, the last office of the church before we go to bed. As the cart was drawn away, he commended his soul to God with the words of the psalm. I said that he hung in the noose for a brief time. So, of course, he's going to be hung, drawn, and quartered. This is the punishment. He hung in the noose for a brief time, making the sign of the cross as best he could. As the executioner made to cut him down in preparation for disemboweling him while still alive, Lord Mountjoy and some other onlookers tugged at his legs to hasten his death. His lifeless body was then disemboweled and quartered. As his severed head was displayed to the crowd, no one shouted the traditional traitor. So they would take such people and hold their heads up, and people would shout traitor. Apparently, they were too moved by his words and by the dispositions with which he received his martyrdom to have done that in the case of St. Robert Southwell. All right. Now, what about him as a poet and as a prose writer? By the way, you're listening to Reconquest on the Crusade Channel of the Veritas Radio Network. This is Brother Andre Marie. We're talking about the priest, the Jesuit priest and martyr and poet, Saint Robert Southwell, and we're calling the show Saint Robert Southwell: The Truth, the Beauty, and the Gore. All right. So, what about him as a poet? Well, there's something about his life, and this is really what I want people to get out of this show. There's something about his life that is itself an act of beauty. St. Robert Southwell was trying to inculcate in the people who read his works, either prose works or poetry, a love of moral beauty and spiritual beauty that was to be reflected in the excellence of the aesthetic beauty of his poetry or his prose works. He did not want simply to entertain them. He did not want simply to have them loving the beauty of the verse and then go on living a worldly life. He wanted to apply what I think would be Jesuit principles, using the standard techniques that St. Ignatius would have people use who go through the spiritual exercises that he wrote, in order to picture to themselves these scenes and make resolutions from them and try to improve their life thereby. In other words, he was exhorting people to living lives of moral beauty, of virtue, by his poetry and so forth. And he himself lived a life of superlative, we might even say supernal, moral beauty. Pierre Janel, who's one of his biographers and sort of a literary biographer of him, quotes the records in detail from his trial and execution. And he said that St. Robert made of his trial and execution, quote, a work of art of supreme beauty. So the very drama of his trial and execution was itself a work of great beauty, not unlike his poems. Now, A few sort of outtakes from an article which is on the Poetry Foundation's website about him. Let's see. I'm going to skip ahead because, of course, you always have too much. The constant themes of Southwell's poetry are the absolute beauty and truth revealed in Christ and his mother, and the correspondingly absolute necessity that humanity respond to revelation with contrition, repentance, and love. The circumstances of his mission in England were where state power required Catholics to deny their religion, invested his themes with extraordinary pathos and drama. St. Peter's Complaint is about contrition and repentance, as Nancy Pollard Brown argues, but it is also about apostasy and betrayal. The best-known poem, The Burning Babe, presents as the prelude to Christmas a vision of absolute love, constant in rejection. So this is an image of England at the time, rejecting the love of the Christ child by rejecting his mystical body, by rejecting the church, by rejecting his vicar. Concerning his prose works, a modern writer named Geoffrey Hill, who's not a Catholic, wrote an article called The Absolute Reasonableness of Robert Southwell. He wrote this in 1984. And he says that for Southwell, force of mind is manifested in the power to remain unseduced and unterrified. The wonder of Southwell's short career is that he wrote so much and so well in such terrifying circumstances, and especially in the public medium of prose. Threatened with unspeakable violence and frivolity, he wrought in response in his Epistle of Comfort, Triumphs Over Death, and Humble Supplication, a lucid, reasonable, and humane style that places him among the greatest of English prose writers. Now, I want to finish this by reading the poem, as promised, The Burning Babe. Again, this, of course, is a Christmas poem. As I in hoary winter's night stood shivering in the snow, surprised I was with sudden heat which made my heart to glow. And lifting up a fearful eye to view what fire was near, a pretty babe all burning bright did in the air appear, who scorched with excessive heat such floods of tears did shed, as though his floods should quench his flames with which his tears were fed. Alas, quoth he, but newly born in fiery heats I fry, yet none approach to warm their hearts or feel my fire but I. My faultless breast the furnace is, the fuel wounding thorns. Love is the fire, and sighs the smoke, the ashes, shame, and scorns. The fuel justice layeth on, and mercy blows the coals. The metal in this furnace wrought are men's defiled souls. For which, as now on fire I am, to work them to their good, so will I melt into a bath to wash them in my blood. With this he vanished out of sight, and swiftly shrunk away. And straight I called unto mind that it was Christmas Day. All right, when we come back, we'll be talking to Charles Coulomb. Please stick around.
You're listening to Reconquest with Brother Andre Marie, seeking that which was lost and fighting for it. Exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.